Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. We're going to begin by taking a look at some things that have been going on this past week which bear connections of one type or another to the Iran-Contra scandal. Oliver North's trial begins momentarily, or not momentarily, but this week. And some interesting things have been going on over the last several weeks that bear, as I said, in one way or another, on elements of the Iran-Contra scandal. Reading now, first of all, from the San Francisco Examiner of Sunday, January 22nd of 1989. This is a column by Warren Hinkle, and it's headlined, "Inaugural Cleanup Began 2 Weeks Ago." Dateline, Washington, D.C. "Mr. Bush's inaugural bash is over. The limo gridlock has eased and the big cleanup has begun, a process made mellow by the touching presumption that Republicans make less mess than Democrats. The real cleanup, however, began 2 weeks before the inauguration of Skull and Bones' most distinguished prankster. Two big brooms went to work removing the detritus of scandal that threatened to soften the immaculate first steps of Mr. Bush on presidential tundra. The new Reich Minister of Justice, Richard Thornborough, acted like a good soldier and solemnly certified that 300 documents sought by Oliver North's defense were invaluable to national security and could not be subject to the blind glare of justice in a federal courtroom. This is, of course, pure poppycock, as the secrets therein are widely known and indeed a laughing matter to the enemies of the United States, sworn and unsworn." I would interrupt here. Perhaps Mr. Hinkle's analysis here is a bit hasty. Again, in the program which is now in the archives, the two-part series, The December Surprise, The Politics of Terror and the Iran and the Exoneration of the Secret Team, it appears that perhaps the downing of Flight 103 may not have been an act of pure Palestinian terrorism, but rather a key part of the Oliver North defense strategy. Again, we have not got time to go into that right now. It was a long, long program, given the two parts. Check the archives for that one, please. Again, an example for new listeners of how important the archive shows are and an understanding of them to a working comprehension of the arguments being presented here. Continuing now with Warren Hinkle's column from a week ago. "But Thornborough's decision declaring the ridiculous to be sacred had the effect of removing any possibility that Mr. Bush, who already had been subpoenaed by North's able attorney, Brendan I'm Not a Potted Plant Sullivan, would be dragged kicking and screaming into the rehash of the Irangate mess that North's trial will bring. A key to North's defense on the dropped counts would have been that he had conspired with then-Vice President Bush, a claim for which there is abundant evidence. When it became apparent that the ex-Marine was not willing to go down with a national security ship, the way his boss, ex-Rear Admiral John Poindexter, appears willing to do, but would instead attempt to take the past or present president with him, it became incumbent on the incoming administration to see that the national security hand be played with dispatch. There must have been a kind and gentle conversation between Bush and Thornborough before Bush named him to the Attorney General post from the holdover position he was given by Ronald Reagan to clean up the mess in Ed Meese's bunker. This new spirit of cooperation is far different from the last time Bush and Thornborough had dealings. This was back in the less kind and gentle days of 1976, when Bush was at the helm of the CIA and Thornborough was an assistant attorney general in the criminal division, doggedly attempting to get the goods on some 50 rogue CIA agents who had been involved in dirty work up to and including attempted assassinations." Note the up to and including attempted assassinations phrase here. Moving on with Hinkle's column. "Thornborough demanded that Bush declassify 500 documents so he could prosecute the miscreants, but Bush flatly refused to cooperate, not even bothering to claim national security reasons. The two men threw verbal daggers at each other, and Bush became a hero to the CIA for his stonewalling, and hundreds of CIA lads volunteered for his 1980 campaign for the Republican presidential nomination. The CIA suspects were never charged, thanks to Bush. The second potentially nasty matter for Bush was swept away in New York City the week before the inauguration when outgoing U.S. Attorney Rudy Giuliani dismissed gun-running charges against a gaggle of powerhouse defendants, including an ex-Israeli general. The group had screamed bloody murder when they were indicted shortly before the Iran-Contra arms scandal broke for selling arms to Iran. The defendants claimed almost to a man, and their lawyers said they were ready to prove that the arms deal they were readying had been put together with the full cooperation of none other than George Bush. Thus, another trial where it would have been inappropriate for the 41st president's name to be used in vain was in the bin with the rest of the untold history of Irangate. The only unsettling matter in an otherwise tidied-up presidency was the unexpected arrest in Costa Rica last week of John Hull, the sometimes CIA employee whose ranch near the Nicaraguan border was used for Contra training camps, arms deliveries, and, according to accounts before Senate committees, for transshipments of cocaine and guns for drug deals for the Contras. Hull was picked up on a narcotics investigation charge by Costa Rican authorities, who said they were considering charging him with narcotics and weapons trafficking and spying for the United States. The specific charges against Hull will be announced on Monday in Costa Rica. Hull's arrest will doubtless become a matter of first attention for Bush's State Department. All congressional testimony relating to Hull's alleged activities on behalf of the Contras involve reference to the vice president's office. There are long memories in Washington of the fact that the first emergency call when the Hassenfuss cargo plane went down in Nicaragua, starting the whole Contra arms for drugs ball of wax melting, was made not to the CIA Oliver North or the National Security Council, but to the office of the vice president. This would be an ugly thing in an otherwise perfect inaugural month for Bush. It would be beastly of the Costa Ricans to put Hull upon a stage where he might sing. Well, again, it is the contention here that even though Warren Hinkle here says that the documents requested by Oliver North wouldn't have any secret information in them or nothing of import to people in this country. In fact, some of the documents North was trying to get a hold of, reviewing some of the information we've looked at before, pertained to the Iria weapons deal and thereby to a whole nest, a whole can of worms, including neo-Nazis, Galen agents, Middle Eastern terrorists who may very well be working for us and not for the radical Palestinians, ultimately. Again, this sounds crazy because the Iria deal was done by a fellow named Munzer El Kassar with ties to Abu Nidal, one of the people possibly involved in the bombing of Flight 103. Again, an impossible thing to explain under the circumstances, but the connections between these elements detailed in Radio Free America number 32 and then taken up again in a big way in the December surprise, The Politics of Terror and the Exoneration of the Secret Team. Also, the fact that the current Attorney General, Richard Thornburgh, attempted to get 500 documents declassified when looking into rogue agents possibly involved in attempted assassinations. Well, we're going to take a look at CIA work, dirty work, alleged non-dirty work in the mid-70s and see how that ties in with some of the things that have been coming to light recently. We'll do that in just a moment. We also took a look at the outgoing Rudolph Giuliani, who may now be running for the Republican nomination for mayor of New York City. We took a look at not only his role in exonerating the people who were in the Iran-Contra-related weapons deal that Warren Hinkle just talked about, but also he faced Congressional Counsel Arthur Lyman, who was representing General Aniline & Film, the former American subsidiary of I.G. Farben. A stock-fixing, stock-manipulation case against them was dismissed because Rudolph Giuliani withheld information that could have been used by the defense. I speculated a couple of weeks ago about whether or not some sort of a deal may have been cut if Giuliani, who had also arrested a number of people in connection with Pizza Connection 4, another Iran-Contra-related case, that if Giuliani perhaps busted the right people in Pizza Connection 4, let the right people go in the Iran-Contra scandal-related weapons trafficking case, and perhaps went a little easier on General Aniline & Film and Arthur Lyman, then perhaps there might be a nice little political plum awaiting him, such as the Republican nomination for mayor, which polls have him winning against current Democratic incumbent Mayor Ed Koch. And last but certainly not least, John Hull is now in custody in Costa Rica, and as has been the case for an awful lot of people that have been involved in the Iran-Contra scandal, his health has taken a sudden turn for the worse. Reading now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, January 25th of 1989. In the Chronicle's World Report section, we find the following: alleged U.S. spy stricken in Costa Rica. American rancher John Hull, detained in Costa Rica 2 weeks ago on charges of spying for the CIA, and of having links with arms and drug traffickers, has been taken to a hospital with apparent heart problems, his doctor said. The physician, Max Pacheco, said Hull had been in poor health for several months, suffering from diabetes and cardiovascular problems, and was taken to the hospital on Monday. He was reported to be in stable condition. Well, there are a lot of ways of giving people heart problems, even if they don't already have them. We took a look specifically at a sinister Oliver North communique in Radio Free America number 33, in which we dealt with the rash of deaths that have occurred in relation to the Iran-Contra scandal. Many of these people died of heart attacks, and there was a sinister intimation by Oliver North that, in fact, those heart attacks could be produced. One wonders if perhaps that has something to do with John Hull's heart condition. Perhaps it is a natural situation, but the timing is interesting. And what's more interesting, too, given all of the many things that can happen to somebody in a hospital, ranging from mind control techniques in which combinations of operant and Pavlovian conditioning, psychoactive drugs, psychosurgery, hypnosis can be used, and more sophisticated techniques can all be used to alter or erase a human being's memory. Of course, also people with bad hearts sometimes die. That happens also. Happened a lot in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal. And in fact, someone who came up with a very fast-acting case of bad heart, someone whose name also figures on the periphery of this ever-widening scandal, well, this fellow experienced heart problems after being shot repeatedly down in Honduras. Reading from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, January 26th of 1989. This is a story by David Adams of the Chronicle Foreign Service. Dateline Managua headlined, Ex-Honduran Military Strongman Slain, subheaded Staunch U.S. Ally in Early 1980s. The article reads, General Gustavo Alvarez Martinez, a former head of the Honduran military who helped establish the Nicaraguan Contras and was once the United States' staunchest ally in Central America, was shot to death by left-wing assassins yesterday in Tegucigalpa, the Honduran capital. A small left-wing guerrilla group, the Chinchineros Popular Liberation Movement, or MPL, claimed responsibility for the shooting. Witnesses said Alvarez, 51, was fired upon by five or six men carrying automatic pistols while he was riding in a car near his home in the east of the capital. The gunmen made their getaway in a stolen car. Alvarez died almost immediately from his wounds. His bodyguard was also killed and another person was wounded. A spokesman for the MPL, in a message to a local radio station, said the execution, unquote, was carried out in the name of the Martyrs of the Honduran Revolution, unquote. The MPL, also known as the Chinchineros, is a small group made up mostly of students. It was formed after the Nicaraguan Revolution in 1979, and came to prominence in 1982 when some of its members hijacked an airliner and held a number of businessmen hostage. The Chinchineros claimed responsibility for a 1988 attack in which five U.S. servicemen were wounded by grenades and rifle fire. Alvarez, a military strongman who preached a messianic creed of anti-communism, was ousted as armed forces chief in March of 1984 in the most dramatic military purge in Honduran history. The military leaders who took control accused him of warmongering, abuse of power, and embezzling millions of dollars. Politicians and human rights workers claim that he presided over a reign of terror that included death squad killings and more than 130 political disappearances. Uncle Gus, as some Hondurans called him, was a key figure in the United States' response to the spread of communism in Central America in the early 1980s. At the time, Washington was putting pressure on Honduras to take on the role of buffer state against left-wing guerrillas in El Salvador. As head of the National Police in 1981, Alvarez became the godfather of the Contras by telling CIA Director William Casey that anti-Sandinista forces could operate from Honduran territory. He worked closely with the CIA to build the Contra rebel force to fight Nicaragua's leftist government. Interrupting, recall that William Casey was one of the many people whose health took a sudden turn for the worse when his name came up in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal. Continuing, the left wing had their own name for Alvarez, the Hitman. As head of the National Police and then as armed forces chief, Alvarez was accused of maintaining a network of secret jails, special interrogators, and kidnapping teams that detained and killed suspected leftists. The CIA does not deny its involvement in military and police training in Honduras, but it does deny any association with torture and assassination. Alvarez was reportedly so close to the CIA that the agency's Honduras station chief, Dan Winter, asked the general to be godfather to his son. According to Honduran political analyst Victor Meza, Alvarez came from the third generation of students of the School of Dirty War Tactics. The French dirty war specialists in Algeria trained the Argentinians, and the Argentinians were the ones who trained Alvarez, unquote, he said. In 1984, Alvarez went into exile in Florida, where for a time he worked as a consultant to the RAND Corporation, a think tank in Santa Monica, and worked for the Pentagon. Well, obviously, he would be in a position to say quite a bit about the creation of the Contras and perhaps shed light on the role of a number of different American officials in the Contra Army at one time or another. One wonders also if perhaps he knew about some of the contingency plans for Rex 84, given the fact that some of the National Guard maneuvering in and around the military maneuvers in Honduras were ultimately going to help provide some of the weapons that were going to be sold to help finance the Contras. It sounds complicated, but again, some of the information contained in the Sheehan affidavit, I think, is useful in this connection. It's also worth noting here, too, that he is referred to, that is, the late Alvarez is referred to as the third generation of the School of Dirty War Tactics. In the book Hidden Terror by A.J. Langeth, or Hidden Terrors by A.J. Langeth, rather, the career of Dan Mitrione is spotlighted, and the long-standing American involvement not only in police and military training, but in training for torture and assassination, is documented past the point of intelligent argument. Beyond that, the evolution of the kinds of tactics that Dan Mitrione was teaching to Latin American national security establishments on the behalf of our own national security establishment began again with the French in the dirty war in Algeria in the 50s. Then it was taught to the Argentinians under the auspices largely of the World Anti-Communist League and American intelligence. Then Alvarez learned himself. And again, Hidden Terrors by A.J. Langeth, a good source material here. Now, the group, the Chinchineros, is interesting. That's the group that at least in most articles is credited with having assassinated Alvarez. Certainly, somebody using their name has taken credit for the assassination. That perhaps this is not as hard and fast a connection as we might want, or that as perhaps some people might want. That was indicated in an article in the San Francisco Examiner of Thursday, January 26th of 1989. In an article by Wilson Ring, special to the Examiner, dateline Tegucigalpa, Honduras, headline Slaying Sheikhs Honduras, the very last paragraph here about the Chinchineros is interesting. Some Western diplomats in Tegucigalpa believe the Chinchinero no longer exist and think right-wing terrorist groups are using the name to hide their identity. Well, again, we don't know, but it is interesting, and if perhaps this line of speculation on the part of some Western diplomats is accurate, perhaps those right-wing terrorists are helping the mopping up for the George Bush inauguration. There are several different people in the Iran-Contra scandal, including George Bush, who was head of the CIA at the time of the Orlando Letelier assassination. There are several people involved with the Iran-Contra scandal whose names crop up in connection with the Orlando Letelier assassination. Again, George Bush, who was head of the CIA, as we looked at in Radio Free America program 30, and again in number 31. Also, J. Stanley Pottinger, another person whose name crops up in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal, and who, along with George Bush, played a key role in the investigation-slash-cover-up of the assassination of Orlando Letelier. Also in the Christic Institute's suit against a number of the defendants in the Iran-Contra scandal, the names of a fellow named Frank Castro also emerged in connection with not only the Orlando Letelier assassination or elements around it, but also the Iran-Contra scandal. Some of the same CIA-sponsored anti-Castro Cubans that figure in everything from the Bay of Pigs to the assassination of President Kennedy, big-time drug trafficking, the Letelier assassination, terrorist bombings, and the Iran-Contra scandal Well, as I say, many of the same names touch some of the same bases. The names of Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple have been brought up in connection with the Letelier assassination. This in the book Death in Washington by Fred Landis and Donald Freed. Interestingly enough, some information came to light, and whether or not it was deliberately floated at this time or just happened to bubble up, which would tend to fix blame for the Orlando Letelier assassination solely on the national security establishment of Pinochet's Chile, or Pinochet's Chile. As we've looked at in the past, in our examination of the assassination of Orlando Letelier, although Sir Orlando Letelier, let's call him, I never know how to pronounce that, the involvement of the Chilean DINA, their secret police, is beyond the point of intelligent debate, but equally, the involvement of elements of the U.S. national security establishment is apparent. But that would not be apparent in the somewhat limited version of the Letelier assassination, which was floated in the news media this past week. Reading now from the Chronicle of the very same day that the assassination of General Alvarez, or ex-General Alvarez, was announced, the very same day that was announced, the following piece of information emerged in the San Francisco Chronicle, among other papers. That day, again, is Thursday, January 26th of 1989, and the article here, a New York Times story, Dateline Santiago, Chile, is headlined, Chilean Documents on D.C. Killings, and it's subheaded Letelier Case. A retired Chilean diplomat has asserted that high-level Chilean officials, in conversations in 1978, acknowledged the responsibility of the head of the intelligence police for two killings in Washington in 1976. The account, if confirmed, would be the first known instance in which Chilean officials have recognized their government's connection to the killings of Orlando Letelier, a former Chilean foreign minister then in exile, and Ronnie Moffat, a Washington co-worker. Well, the involvement of the DINA has been alleged by, or pretty damn bloody well near proven by a lot of different people. In fact, definitely proven in a court of law, even though the involvement of the American national security establishment was covered up in that court of law. What's interesting here is why this particular story surfaced at this particular time. Whether people who were afraid that the Letelier case could explode and perhaps thereby blow up in George Bush's face, or whether perhaps the Pinochet government in Chile, which is dissatisfied with some of the diplomatic pressure being applied by the United States, is perhaps floating this story themselves to let George Bush know that a somewhat friendlier attitude towards his regime is to be expected. A number of observers, including alleged ex-CIA agents like John Stockwell, Phil Redinger, Philip A.G., David McMichael, and others, have stated that one of the problems with George Bush as a president is that as a CIA director, he would have been involved in a lot of dirty things, and it might permit foreign leaders or foreign governments to blackmail him in some way. One of the things I wonder, honestly, is whether perhaps the floating of this story at this time may be a signal to George Bush that a somewhat friendlier attitude towards the Pinochet government is to be expected by that same self-same government. Anyway, speculation, perhaps a modified limited hangout about the Letelier assassination is being put out in order to curtail the roles of people like George Bush, J. Stanley Pottinger, possibly Frank Castro, and others in not only the Letelier case, but also the Iran-Contra scandal. Again, both scenarios, as well as others, food for thought and grounds for further research.